right, we are back. This is Pete Hendrickson, hour two, and my guest in this hour is Dr. Erwin Lutzer. He is the he is a pastor and the author of a new book titled "We Will Not Be Silenced: Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity." Dr. Lutzer is a longtime pastor at the Moody Church. He served as senior pastor for 36 years there. He's the award-winning author of couple of books, 1 Minute After You Die and Hitler's Cross, and has been a featured speaker on a lot of radio programs over the years. I'm delighted to have him on, and we're going to have a good conversation, I think, about his new book, which addresses, just as in the subtitle there, addresses the assault of the current cultural insurgency on Christianity, and from my perspective, and I'm hoping Dr. Lutzer will cooperate in expanding the picture a little bit. It is also an assault on our underlying Western civilization culture, a culture in which Christianity found fertile ground in which to flourish, and a culture which was in large part generated and supported by the Christian message. And with that, Dr. Lutzer, are you there?
I am there. I am here. And thanks so much for having me on.
That's a great pleasure.
And, go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
What I wanted to say is, first of all, thank you so much. And also, for mentioning my book, We Will Not Be Silenced. And what you said in your intro is right. You know, the reason I wrote the book is when I began to realize that the radical left in America does not believe that America can be fixed. They believe, yes, it must be destroyed and rebuilt on a quasi-Marxist foundation. Now, your listeners need to understand that cultural Marxism says that we can bring about a Marxist country without a bloody revolution. We can do it if we capture the media, if we capture education, if we capture law. We can bring about, and of course bring about an incremental kind of cultural Marxism.
Yes,
and so what I do, and I'll make this quite brief, is that I apply this to history and show the vilification of our Judeo-Christian roots. Actually, it is cultural Marxism that stands behind that, the tearing down of monuments and so forth. Then to race, I show that the intention of our universities today in all of these diversity studies is to keep the races totally divided in antagonism with one another. That is deliberate. And yes, then I apply it to freedom of speech and all the other topics that are in the book.
Yeah, I would argue that, in fact, that that incremental subversion of the existing culture, the culture which provided an environment in which Marxism was capable of, you know, growing and taking root and becoming a meaningful force in academia, in particular, this culture provided that opportunity, and it's being taken advantage of. And that incremental, so far bloodless revolution is taking place. I would also argue that the cultural Marxists never had any interest in fixing the existing system. They don't like the existing system. They don't like the existing system, even if it was perfect, even if every concept in the Declaration of Independence, every concept of individual liberty, every concept of equality, were fully realized without any compromises, without any failings whatsoever, they still wouldn't like it, because what they want is a socialist structure, and our system is not socialist. It isn't meant to be socialist. Socialism doesn't work. Socialism has been attempted and has failed repeatedly throughout history, but that's not the point. It's very good for the people who are in charge in socialist systems, even if it's very bad for everyone else. And these folks that are behind this move intend to be in charge. And so 100% in agreement with you, Dr. Lutzer. I think that that you're absolutely correct. So please forgive that interruption. Carry on. Tell us more about about where you went with your reasoning and where you ended up with your conclusions.
Well, of course, going back to critical race theory that I devote quite a bit of time to, as I already mentioned, the intention is to keep the races in perpetual conflict with the idea. You must remember that for Marx, the key to history was oppression. Mm-hmm. So what happens is he believes that the family has to be destroyed because, after all, men oppress their wives, parents oppress their children, they take them to church, and God is the ultimate oppressor. So the whole idea is the family, the nuclear family, has to be destroyed. And that's why Black Lives Matter on its website says we believe in the dissolution of the nuclear family.
Sure.
But anyway, what's important...
It's a competing power center.
What's important to realize... Yes. What's important to understand is that in the midst of all this, you mentioned something earlier that I want to capitalize on. They want to use the freedoms of the Constitution to eventually destroy the Constitution.
Yes.
And this, of course, is very evident. And even the freedom of speech, and I show how Marxism, by the way, implies that there should not be freedom of speech because, after all, the oppressors take advantage of freedom of speech, so it is time for only the oppressed to speak. And that's why conservatives are not allowed in our universities. But even writing books about why we shouldn't have freedom of speech is based on the concept of freedom of speech. And with regard to socialism, one of the largest, longest chapters in the book is on socialism. And I point out that socialists, of course, can only talk about dividing up wealth. They cannot talk about creating it because socialism cannot create wealth. And Winston Churchill said it best when he said the great vice of capitalism is the unequal distribution of blessings. And the great benefit of socialism is the equal distribution of misery. So what you really have in our society today is this ideal that somehow if we work towards a socialist solution, we'll be able to find, you know, a great deal of help. By the way, there was a kibbutz in Israel that decided that they would work according to socialist principles, and they found out they couldn't because people misused it. The people who got up late in the morning got paid the same as those who got up early. And they discovered that it was a paradise for parasites.
Yeah, that was in fact the experience of the initial colony here in the United States that attempted to operate on a social basis or a socialist basis and had exactly the same experience. Everyone recognized pretty quickly that, you know, it didn't matter how hard you worked, you were still going to get an equal share of the yield. And pretty quickly that colony was starving, and ultimately that resulted in what became our Thanksgiving event, our Thanksgiving history, when those folks were yanked away from that socialist proposition and put in had more of a capitalist structure imposed by their colonial governor there, and were rescued from starvation in part by the outcome of that change, and maybe some contributions from the Native American population as well. That one's a little more unclear, but same exact experience as the kibbutz that you have described.
Yes, and of course it has to be that way because when you work in a socialist economy, people don't realize that the money that you earn is not yours. It belongs to the state, and the state divides it up however they will. And what I need to emphasize with regard to my book is that every chapter has the response of the church. In other words, my real interest is not only in critiquing the culture, but always to ask, how do we respond? Because I think that the church oftentimes has been shamed into silence. And that's why the title of the book is, We Will Not Be Silenced, because I want to give people courage to speak, even if there are some very, very negative consequences.
Yes. Yes, it's so important that defending community, I'll use the term conservative, those who wish to conserve the existing preceding status quo, cultural status quo, have got to get into the battle. They cannot sit on the sidelines either politely or in paralysis. While others occupy territory, and we have to stand out, step out, even when it's been made uncomfortable, and it will be made uncomfortable. It is made uncomfortable. The forces arrayed against the conservative voices are massive, especially in terms of technology, the social media, the controllers of social media. And so forth. They're huge, but this is a time for a new, a milder form of martyrdom, even to be willing to step out and step into the line of fire and speak your truth, as we're all called upon to do, both as good Americans, both as real human beings, and from the Christian message as well, very particularly. And that's one of the reasons why I said early on that the Christian message is one that underpins much of Western civilization that needs to be defended right now, because it goes to that. It involves individual moral agency and individual moral accountability. We are responsible for what we do, and we are responsible for what we do not do. And we can't afford any sins in either direction.
Yes, and one of the most interesting chapters, I think, in my book is on how propaganda works. The purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, they will not change their minds. And I show them how it works through collective demonization, and we certainly see that going on in our culture, where someone who steps out of line is demonized, and everybody wants to make sure that they are woke, because woe to the person who's on the wrong side of wokeness. The other thing that I point out is the use of language. You know, Hitler, when he wanted to starve children, called it putting them on a low-calorie diet. So what you do is, in propaganda, you tell people what they want to hear, but you give them what you want them to have. And we certainly see that happening today, where you have words that are being used, words like equality and justice, that are really very good words, but they are being misused for causes that are unjust and for causes actually that make people unequal. So what we need to do is to be very discerning in this day.
Absolutely. So, Doctor, I opened the show today, the first hour, with an audio of a young woman reading a book called Gay BCs to the whatever audience she was able to find. And she's had thousands of views of this reading done over the years since it was posted on YouTube. I don't know if you're familiar with the book Gay BCs, but I'm sure you can understand from the title what that's all about. It literally is a Dr. Seuss level ABC book, but oriented towards the GLBTQIA plus perspective and community. You have a chapter in your book titled "Sexualize the Children," and I'd like to hear more from you about that particular subject, because I believe myself that it is the insurgency into the education of children or the influence on children's beliefs and perspectives at the earliest age in their formative years that is the most threatening and dangerous component of the assault on our culture and our civilization. And I think you deal with that well. So if you don't mind, could you touch on that a bit and share with our listeners your thoughts there?
Well, first of all, I open that chapter by saying that the cell phone in your teenager's hand does more to shape his or her worldview than an hour of church and an hour of Sunday school. But then I point out that the curriculum that is being used today is pornographic. It is intentionally intended to confuse kids. There are curriculum out there that talk about, you know, the various genders and how you have to use the right pronoun. And so you have students who say that they are one thing at home and they get to church. He's born a boy. At home, he's Bert, but you get to school and he wants to be called Bertha. So this kind of confusion is intentional because kids who are confused are easily led. And one of the things they want to do is to break them from the teachings of their parents and so forth and lead them into debauchery, really, because it's very important for the radical left to do all that they can, not only to corrupt the mind, but also to corrupt the soul. So that's where we are. And I say to parents, and I don't know what the answer, every parent has to answer the question for themselves as to where they go to school, whether they're homeschooled or a faith-based school or a public school. But God is going to hold you accountable for the education of your children, and you must realize that we should not throw our lambs into a pack of wolves. This is so critical. So we live at a very, very important junction. Now, thankfully, there are some parents who are standing up, who are standing up to their school boards, and they are objecting to some of these things that are being taught. We need more of that throughout the country to push back against these destructive heresies that are actually intended to win the hearts of our children.
Yeah, absolutely so. Lenin famously said, give me a child for 12 years, I'll give you a communist for life. And that is wisdom. It's disturbing wisdom, but it's wisdom nonetheless. And it has definitely been exploited by, or deployed and exploited by ideological insurgents, the very folks about whom we're speaking. People trying to change the culture, to subvert the culture, I'll use that expression, subvert the culture, long since saw that inserting themselves into the academy was the best road towards success. And long ago did just that. They began taking positions in schools, the education system, not just the colleges, but in elementary and high schools as well, on a huge scale. And consequently, we now see the adoption of critical race theory, of the gender fluidity concepts, of all of these pathologies, social pathologies, flourishing. They're all over. They're like kudzu in the school systems in this country. So this is absolutely a critical area of our attention.
Well, exactly, and parents can no longer ignore it. Used to be that you used to be able to work and somehow work around it or teach your kids differently, but the impact now is so powerful. And of course, I also refer in the book to the 1619 Project, which says that America actually began not because of the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. It was begun with racism and slavery, and it was begun by capitalism. And those are the two villains that they believe need to be destroyed. So if your kid, if your child is in school and he or she is being subjected to this kind of historical revisionism, you as a parent need to do something about it. And what's coming down the pike? Well, I point out that pedophilia is now being justified, of course, because
yes.
When people leave God, there's no reason for them to stop at any point. They can say no to nothing. So it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse unless we stand. And we have to stand even if it gets worse. And we need the courage to do that. And to remember that the church throughout history has always been an island of righteousness in a sea of paganism. But paganism yeah. is coming our way. It's here. And we have to bump up against it.
Yes, this country absolutely is in need of strength in the pulpit, as well as everywhere else, all of our institutions, to resist this onslaught. Happily, a lot of people are now trying to take positions on school boards around the country and so forth to address at least the one thing that we were speaking specifically of a few moments ago. And there is some room for a hope that there's a little bit of an awakening to that problem that's going on. But we are behind the curve at this point, and there's a lot to be done. All right, we're about to go to our mid-hour break, and so please just hang in there, and we'll resume on the other side. My guest, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, author of We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. Great conversation so far, and we will continue on the other side.
You guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com. Text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Antibiotics.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
All right, we're back. Again, Pete Hendrickson with my guest, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, author of We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. We're having a great conversation about this wonderful book. Before I carry on with that conversation, I do want to, again, urge everyone to do business with the Power Mall. Great people. It reflects and represents the great people at this station, and also contributes to the accessibility of this station. Our ability to speak with you. And so if you're in the market for the sort of things that the Power Mall carries, please consider doing business with the Power Mall. So Dr. Lutzer, You make a point in your book about the manner and degree to which Christian institutions have been trending themselves towards, if not socialist perspectives, at least increasingly neoliberal perspectives, expressing the interest of accommodating the changing views of the population at large. An example might be, this isn't one that I believe you referred to specifically, but it's very prominent in the news. Pope Francis, the current Catholic Pope, who is an avowed socialist, he's a declared socialist, and holds forth on all manner of social and legal, even legal views and perspectives and issues, far beyond what I think your average Catholic imagines to be the proper bailiwick of papal opinion, but nonetheless views himself as having a bully pulpit and wants to influence the dialogue in general in socialist directions. Again, an argument that is made in support of that sort of thing is, if we don't make a big enough tent by being inclusive and tolerant of whatever, then we don't attract as many adherents and so forth. But this isn't a valid argument, I think. Could you talk to that point a bit? And share what it is that you say in your book and intend to communicate to Christian leaders throughout the world on the point of their own confidence of perspective, the confidence of their positions, their traditional positions.
Well, I think that in the book what I emphasize is churches, for example, who submit to same-sex marriage ideology. Christian schools are doing that now, Christian liberal arts colleges, because they are under pressure from the government to do so. And the argument is that you can't have Pell Grants unless you play ball with the government and the policies regarding transgenderism and the whole bit. But I think the point that needs to be emphasized is that many Christians submit to the culture under the guise of love. And what I point out is that love can be evil. For example, when Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, it's not as if they stopped loving. They just started to love the wrong things. They became lovers of pleasure, lovers of money, lovers of self. So it's possible to love what God has condemned. So what we have to do as Christians is walk that line between truth and love. And it is really better to be thought hateful, though I certainly hope we aren't at all hateful, but it would be better to be thought hateful and tell people the truth than to whisper lies with a great deal of compassion and encouragement. So what we cannot do is to submit to the culture on the whole point regarding sexual issues. The Bible is very clear regarding same-sex relationships. It, of course, talks about he created them male and female. And we need to be able to stand there and to take the heat. In the book, I tell the story of a church where a pastor preached a message on Genesis 1:27. He was very loving, very deferential, but he did come down and say there are only two genders. Well, the next day they were in the newspapers. They were on the evening news. Students at the university said that they didn't feel safe in a town that would have a church like this. You have to understand that there's a new term that I wasn't used to years ago called safism. Safism means not physical safety, but moral safety. And so these students need a place where they can lick the wounds of their unappreciated victimhood. And so there you go. A church takes a position, and suddenly it is vilified out of nowhere. And I mention that because it's so important for us to realize that that's where the church is. The larger your church, the more attention it's going to draw if you continue to teach the Bible. So what we need to do in the midst of this culture is to say we will not stand. Our goal is not inclusiveness. Our goal actually is truth. When Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, that wasn't a very inclusive statement, but that's not the point. The question is, was it a true statement? And of course, we believe that it was a true statement. So what we need to do is to say, here we stand. You know, truth in other realms is not open to fluidity. 2 + 2 = 4. That, of course, has universality. Notice that it applies in the West as well as the East. So what we need to do is to understand what truth really is. Truth cannot be bent. It cannot be revised like airline schedules. We must accept the truth. And that's where we need to stand. And that's not narrow-mindedness. That's only wisdom and based on common sense.
Yeah, it ought to be. It is. It is, as you say, although the attack on our culture argues that that each group, each identity group has its own truth, that that truth is a point of perspective, and that it arises from one's life experiences, and particularly one's relationship as oppressed or oppressor, and that can be a very complicated and nuanced intersectionality sort of thing, depending on the various components of what is said to be the factors in one's oppressed or oppressive or oppressor stature. Reaching a point quickly in which the very complexity of the proposition of the argument it increasingly erodes even its apparent legitimacy. In any event, it can reach a point where at which the degree of complexity makes it a meaningless and therefore irrelevant argument, even if there is some reality to it. But But yes, the larger point, you know, you're right. There has to be truth. There has to be a bright line at some level or another. At some point, we have to operate on the basis of a bright line, or we're incoherent. We become the destabilized, divided thing that you point out quite correctly is a consequence and a goal, in my view, a goal of the diversity arguments, the assaults, the deliberate maintenance of racial disharmony, the picking at the scabs of grievance that are either real or unreal or exaggerated as they may be, to create a chaotic situation in which we don't have that bright line. We lose sight of the bright line that had sustained us, that had made this into the most prosperous and freest society in the history of the world, begins to unravel. It becomes lost to us, and we go into a state of psychic paralysis, of moral paralysis, moral relativism, and we lose our confidence in our ability to defend that culture that put us at that pinnacle.
Well, you've raised several of the issues. Of course, one is truth. If I go to the bank and say, I have $1,000 in the bank, and the bank says, no, you don't, you only have 100. Well, whose truth is going to prevail? Both of us can't be right. So truth does have a great deal of objectivity. But the other point to be made is that even in those issues that are not mathematics, and actually mathematics is even considered today to be racist. And the reason it is racist is because it believes in objectivity in terms of conclusions. But the other point to be made is that other truths may not have the same kind of logical necessity as mathematics, but still, you're right, every worldview has its own scaffolding, its own presuppositions, and the question is, what is the truth and what can we build on? Ultimately, of course, our truth is found in Jesus Christ because we are eternal beings. So we can disagree about a lot of things here in America, but what is very important is for us to ultimately accept the Prince of Peace and the Prince of Truth, because apart from him, we cannot be saved. But to your point, you're absolutely right. If everybody has their own truth, the universe is a madhouse because it's a madhouse of contradictions. Even when it comes to religions, there are some religions who believe in one God. There are those who believe in multiple gods. They all can't be right. And so what we have to do is to search for truth and be open to that truth. And Jesus made the statement, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So the quest for truth is very important. It exists outside of us. It is not something that simply arises within us, and it has objectivity. And once it is seen, we're not the only ones that see it, because it exists outside of us. It's open to investigation.
Yes. Dr. Lutzer, your final chapter is titled Wake Up, Strengthen What Remains, and you are quoting from something that Jesus wrote to the church at Sardis, I believe. And you carry on there at some length about the necessity for a renewal of purpose and a reinvigoration of the church as an institution in the society in which it exists to resume its core mission and conduct itself accordingly. If you would, in this final few minutes that we have, could you address that conclusive component of your book and kind of explain to people what they're going to find to have been the ultimate message of the entire collection, which is it covers is wide ranging in its coverage, but really drills down to that core point, I think.
You know, Jesus said those words to the church at Sardis, strengthen what remains. The interesting thing about that church is Jesus said that you have a reputation of being alive, but actually you are dead. And when Jesus said that, it's very interesting. So the church had a lot of activity. What it really lacked was life. It lacked the ministry of the Holy Spirit in such a way that it had gone dead. To be brief, what happened to the church at Sardis is it no longer saw the world as an enemy. It accepted the world, it accepted the values of the world, and therefore it lost its impact. And Jesus, of course, urged them to repent. He said, be sure to repent and remember from where you have fallen. So in this way, you could regain your mission. Now, many people in America think that if the Church of Jesus Christ were all that it should be, we wouldn't be under any persecution, we wouldn't be under any difficulty. But actually, as I've already emphasized, the Church worldwide has always been under persecution. There's always been opposition to the Christian faith, as Jesus predicted. And what I emphasize in the book is the necessity for us to clean up our act, to stand for truth, to be willing to take the heat and consider it a badge of honor. Jesus said that even when men persecute you and revile you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake, rejoice and be exceedingly glad. So I wrote the book, We Will Not Be Silenced, from the standpoint of someone who wants to give families and churches the courage to do what they need to do to stand against the culture, but at the same time to preach the gospel, to say to the broken world, the words of Jesus, come all unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. People need to hear words of hope, and the church has words of hope. And we have to be welcoming, even when we cannot be affirming of certain lifestyles, certainly. But at the same time, we have to offer up hope to sinners.
Yeah, it's not enough to simply say no. We have to also find a way of saying yes. And that's something I got from your book as one of the core messages. It's almost a Braveheart kind of exhortation to people who ought to be standing in the pulpit, speaking as soldiers in a battle. For the hearts and minds and souls of their congregant, and of the culture overall, and yet who are not. You mentioned earlier about the idea of Pell Grants and so forth. There's the 401c problem as well, where churches have let themselves be co-opted into being non-political when so much. It is politics. The question of the message that our children are immersed in 24/7 is related to or subject to the influences of politics and yet most pastors eschew politics as a subject of discourse at all. They don't touch it. They pretend that the church is beyond that. That it isn't a question of significance. And uh, And let's just all sing Kumbaya a few times and be forgiving and call it a day. And, you know, go home to Facebook and Twitter and CNN and Netflix and what have you at the end of the meeting. And, you know, they'll have you in their hands. Those influences will have you in their hands for the next 6 days and 23 hours. And then you can come back for another hour of listening to a little sermonizing and then we'll start the cycle all over again. And that's all that happens. Am I wrong?
You know, as a church, and now I'm speaking to the pastors, it's so important that they speak on the controlling realities of the culture. Now, as a pastor, I personally never endorsed a political candidate or a political party. But you're absolutely right that many of the issues that we are dealing with are indeed political issues, and they can't be extracted from politics. Mike Huckabee made a very interesting statement recently. He says, people say that Christians should stay away because politics is dirty. He said, do you think that it will be any cleaner if Christians have nothing to do with it? Now, I don't believe that a pastor should be embroiled in politics per se, but he should be speaking and helping people and providing literature for cultural streams that they are dealing with in their schools, in their businesses, issues such as race, issues such as, you know, the other issues of freedom of religion, critical race theory. In other words, what we need to do is to make sure that we are trying to help our people to navigate the culture biblically and with a great deal of conviction. And that responsibility really does rely ultimately on the pastor. But even as a church, he can't speak on everything. It's possible to have seminars, to have ideas whereby people can be encouraged and strengthened. And that's why I wrote the book, We Will Not Be Silenced, is to give some direction, because people are wondering what to do at this time when the church oftentimes is shamed into silence. And we've spoken about the universities. Many of our students, you know, they won't be talked out of their faith, but they will be mocked out of their faith. And we have the responsibility of helping them navigate this culture. So that's where the church is at, and God has given us resources. But there's a tremendous cost to obedience. There hasn't been in America so far, but there sure is now, a tremendous cost to obedience, and that cost is going to get increasingly steeper.
Yes. And just to clarify, I wasn't referring when I spoke of the pastors getting involved politically in matters of candidates or parties, so much as the political discourse that you very helpfully refined out there of the cultural issues that are enwrapped in the political debates and contests that go on, because they are the things that happen politically. Before you came on, I read a piece discussing Rachel Levine, the new current assistant secretary of health in this country, who is a transgendered man, characterizing himself as a woman now, and who is responsible for the federal approach to mental health in this country now because of the position that he has been put into. So that's politics, but that absolutely is has a powerful cultural and a cultural component that is relevant to and can be properly addressed by I think pastors in churches if they will simply stand up and recognize their responsibility to do this, as you so eloquently extol them to do in this excellent book, We Will Not Be Silenced. Dr. Lutzer, I want to thank you very much for being on today. The show is coming towards a close here, and so we're going to have to end at this point. But it was a great conversation. I very much enjoyed speaking with you, and I hope that the book does very well, especially amongst the community of pastors, which I think is where it will do the most good, because they are influential. They that's the point. And that's one of the reasons people are congregants. They want to be guided. They want to be helped in their perspectives. And you are helping the helpers of those perspectives gain a correct perspective themselves. So well done. And thank you for that service. And thank you for being on the show.
And people can go to Amazon or they can go to christianbook.com. And thanks for interviewing me. And again, the name of the book, We Will Not Be Silent. So thank you very much and God bless.
God bless. All right. That was Dr. Erwin Lutzer, Lutzer. As you heard, his book can be found at Amazon, and it is very well written. Very comprehensive structure. It's very much from a Christian perspective, but it has universal messages, I think. I actually would recommend it. It was good. It was a good read. I hope you enjoyed the conversation that we've just had as much as I did. I will be back with you on Tuesday at the same time. 12 to 2 Eastern Daylight Time or 11 to 1 Central Time. I hope that you will join me. If I have a guest for that show, it is yet to be that's yet to be finalized, but we will have interesting things to talk about. Having had, no doubt, an exciting weekend go by between now and then that will offer lots of material, a lot of grist for the mill. So you folks take care. It's been a great pleasure. And have a good weekend, and we will see you on the other side.
And the lover of my soul, Creator God, He is Yahweh. Great I am, He is Yahweh. The Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Rose of Sharon, He is Yahweh. The righteous Son, He is Yahweh. The three in one, He is Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.